Sometimes, after living in a place for months or years, you suddenly see something that sparks your curiosity, and you wish you had a professional reporter to investigate why it is the way it is. That's where we come in. From Nashville Public Radio, this is Curious Nashville, where we answer your questions about the city. I'm Emily Siner.
Hello.
Oh, hey, Rachel. It's Emily.
Hi, how are you?
Rachel Edge is the one who asked us our very first Curious Nashville question. Do you know the question offhand?
Sure. Offhand, in the Nashville City Cemetery, there is the grave marker. I think it's Margaret McCutcheon is what it says. And then underneath it says, she turned from blood kin.
Blood kin. That's the words blood and kin smushed together into one.
And as soon as I saw that, it just struck me. I had to know why that was on her grave marker and thought that you guys might be able to help me find the answer.
What do you think it means if you had to come up with a story?
Gosh, I've been thinking about it for months. I mean, she turned from her family. And I think to put that on her gravestone, like for that to be the last thing that someone in her family put, she must have done something really terrible. Like, I can't think, like, did she leave somebody out of a will? You know, did she marry somebody that they didn't like?
Love and money, both good theories. I tell Rachel I'll investigate, but first, I need some background info. This is a morbid question, but have you thought about what you want on your gravestone?
Oh, no, I haven't thought about that. Morbid as I am, that's kind of surprising that I haven't.
I remember in grade school, we had an assignment, I think probably a Halloween assignment, where we had to draw our gravestone, and I hated it because I just hate thinking about death.
I think I do, too. I think my obsession kind of started... My first husband actually was killed in a car accident. And I think after that, I just started having all these questions about death and what happens to it. So I think I try to quell that fear by just sort of embracing that it's something that's going to happen to everyone eventually. I mean, it's going to happen to everybody.
Did that sort of like humanize death in a way? Like it made you realize that there are people that were loved in those graves?
Yes. When people think about going to cemeteries, they just think of dead people. But, you know, those were their people. They had stories. That's why we have cemeteries, is because those people want to be remembered. They want to leave some sort of mark. And in a way, it's just like I like to go and be like, I see you. Like, I know that you were here once.
Okay, if we can find out what she did, would she want this to be a secret?
Oh, that's a good one. I think she would be happy that someone is looking into it to see what happened. I don't know. We'll never get to hear her side of the story, which is kind of sad.
Unless there's an afterlife.
Yeah. Is that going to be part of your story?
It's like an immersion journalism.
Yeah.
To a whole new
level. Like a psychic and like trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Let me know if you go do that.
Okay, before I try to find a medium to commune with Margaret McCutcheon, I'm going to try the internet. Here's what I can find about Margaret McCutcheon online. She was born in 1892 and died 88 years later. Her obituary was printed in the Tennessean on December 8, 1980. She's buried in the city cemetery between Martha Clenny and Thomas McCutcheon. Margaret's middle name is Harriet. But I can't access the obituary online, so I head to the Nashville Public Library's microfilm collection.
So 1980, December 8th, right here. So this is the one we're looking for.
Sarah Brindley is helping me out here. She's a program specialist with the library and a microfilm enthusiast.
I grew up going to the library. My mother worked at the library, and I was one of those little kind of nerds that in elementary school, if I was bored, I would go downstairs and look in the microfilm, and I'd look at like the old ads just to see how much things were. Not for any research or anything, just because I was very curious.
She pulls out a little box and starts unrolling a long strand of film.
So I'm just going to look and see where we're at.
First, we land on a classifieds page from December 7th, 1980.
$180 a month for rent.
Yes.
Finally, we land on the front page of December 8th. There's a story about the USSR, a parade at Hillwood High School. There's also an actually rather famous story written by reporter Jerry Thompson with the headline, My Life with the Klan. He was sent out undercover for a year to find out what the KKK was up to. Then he wrote this 9-part series about it, the second of which ran on the same day as Margaret's obituary.
Obituaries are on page 25. And let's see, some McCutcheon. McCutcheon right there.
Oh.
And I can zoom in on her.
Margaret has one of the shortest obituaries on the page, and it only names two survivors. They're her nephews, Thomas and John Wadley, and they didn't even live in Tennessee. They lived in Texas. It does not, however, mention anything immediately useful, like whether she had an unfavorable marriage or whether she was mean to key family members. I file away the obit and pursue a different avenue. Here's my question. What's up with the word bloodkin? Why not just say family? The Oxford English Dictionary lists the first known use of the word bloodkin in 1816, when a writer in Winchester, Virginia named Joseph Thomas penned the following lines in a rather morbid poem. I asked my friend Jacob Lewis to do a dramatic reading.
Sickness with her long train disease, with wild distress her woes increase. Death brings the fatal moments nigh, when dear bloodkin survivors cry.
Creepy? Yes. Helpful? No. Then my boss's boss stops by and gives me this other clue. He tells me there's a southern gothic rock band called Bloodkin. According to Paste magazine, they are one of the greatest rock and roll bands of the 90s and 2000s you've never heard of. I got a ghost from a spinning on food. I email the lead singer, Daniel Hutchins, who tells me he got the name from a short story. Margaret McCutcheon had nothing to do with it. So here's where I'm at. I have discovered the Southern Gothic rock genre, but I do not know anything more about Margaret McCutcheon. It's time to visit her in person.
So we're going up here to Section 4, Lot 17, home of the Wadleys and McCutcheons.
Fred Zahn from the Nashville Historic Commission is my tour guide.
The city cemetery here was begun and opened in 1822, and it is not the oldest cemetery in the county, but what is really super cool, it is the oldest public cemetery. It's got just everybody. It's got blacks and whites and Jews and Christians and rich and poor, founders of Nashville, common laborers, and even slaves.
Here's another fun fact about the Nashville Cemetery. It hasn't sold a burial plot since 1870. That's 145 years ago. But if you can prove that you are descended from a family that owns a plot, the cemetery will find a way to fit you in.
I'd like to say that if anybody's that interested, there's always a little bit more room.
Just kind of scooch people over?
Well, no, there's no scooching. But I have buried almost 2 dozen people since I've been here, and we hadn't bumped into anybody yet.
Which, Fred says, is harder than it looks. There are definitely empty patches of grass in the cemetery, but unfortunately for everyone involved, there are only about 3,000 remaining grave markers, and almost 20,000 people are buried here. Fred tells me this story. One time when someone was digging up a pipe in the parking lot next door, they uncovered some extra tombstones they didn't know about. Turns out someone else had decided it was okay to annex part of the cemetery and just pave over it. So in that sense, Margaret McCutcheon is pretty lucky. Her tombstone has survived, ominous epitaph and all.
So we have Ms. McCutcheon here, and she's actually Miss McCutcheon. She was a single lady.
Fred has the inside scoop when it comes to people buried here, so I asked him to find out what he could about Margaret. He was able to locate the official cemetery ledger book from the 1980s.
And it turns out that Miss McCutcheon is the first entry. It says she passed away from cardiac arrest, but the important clue was that it also listed the name of a funeral home that buried her. And so I took that and Googled away, and it turns out that the man who owned that funeral home passed away himself, and so that was kind of a dead end.
No pun intended.
Yeah, well, yeah. Cemetery work's full of a lot of puns.
He did find another clue, a reference card about the family plot.
And then paperclipped to the back of that card was this piece of paper.
It's a printout of an email from Taylor Wadley about a grave in the family plot. Fred Googled his name and found that Taylor had checked in on Facebook at a Sonic drive-in in Texas.
I Facebooked him, and he Facebooked me right back. And we just got to talking, and he told me the story as he knew it.
Yes, Fred got the story.
And it all gets down to furniture.
Yeah.
Her nephew was a little cross that he didn't get some things that he had wanted. And he was also charged with erecting her marker.
This nephew, it turns out, was mentioned in Margaret's obituary, John Wadley, who also went by Jack. Of course, this brings up even more questions. Like, why? Why would Jack do this over furniture? Jack is no longer alive. But fortunately, one of his bloodkin is.
Hello, this is Taylor.
Taylor Wadley, a.k.a. Jack Wadley's nephew.
First of all, could you explain your relationship to Margaret McCutcheon?
My grandmother had two sisters. They were nice old ladies that were quiet and stayed to themselves.
One of those great aunts was Margaret McCutcheon.
I must have been about 8 years old was the last time that I saw her.
As you've been told, we're trying to figure out the story behind the cryptic epitaph on her tombstone.
Yes.
What do you know about it?
What I remember and what I was told is my Uncle Jack wanted a bunch of furniture that she was in possession of. My seventh great-grandfather made furniture in the Tennessee area, and she had a bunch of stuff that was, you know, handed down through the years that Jack wanted. She wouldn't let him have them. And when she had passed, he put that on her tombstone.
She turned from bloodkin.
Yes.
Taylor says one of the things that he heard his Uncle Jack really wanted was what's called a Jackson press. It's a kind of Southern antique storage chest built in the mid-1800s.
I remember it was about 4 feet tall. It had a marble top. And if you lift up the marble top inside, there was a 12-inch round brass record player, and she ended up leaving it in her garage to rot, and that's what it did.
Taylor doesn't know why his great-aunt refused to hand over the antiques. But to be honest, he's upset about it too. Those weren't just pieces of furniture to him. They were McCutcheon history.
I think a whole lot of really nice family furniture got ruined because of whatever happened. I think it was childish on her part and then childish on his part for putting it on the tombstone.
So do you think that he put this on the tombstone, like, to be malicious?
He did it out of spite. He did it out of spite. He couldn't get it or any other way, so he put it on a tombstone just to have the last word and, you know, excuse me for saying this, just to piss her off. Because there's absolutely nothing she could do about it, and he thought he won.
Who do you think won?
I'm going to call it a draw.
A few weeks after this call, I finally tracked down Jack Wadley's sons. And their side of the family was told a different version. In fact, Jack's son John says he doesn't think the epitaph had anything to do with furniture. He says after Margaret died, his dad Jack was the only person in the family to go to Tennessee and deal with her estate. And when he got to her house, he found that her caretaker had cleaned it out. Almost everything was gone. Margaret and Jack always talked about the importance of your closest family, John says, how you don't turn your back on blood kin. And Jack thought her trust in her caretaker was a betrayal of the family and of him. Later, they realized Margaret probably had dementia. But at the time, Jack wasn't feeling spiteful. He was just feeling really upset and hurt. I meet up with Rachel Edge, the woman who first asked about Margaret McCutcheon. Rachel, how do you feel about this reasoning?
I'm excited. It's kind of like all the stories that we had come up with. What could she have done? She wasn't a terrible person. You know, families are beautiful and very complicated.
Curious Nashville is produced by Nashville Public Radio, and the questions are selected by you, our listeners. Go to curious.wpln.org to see questions we've already answered and to vote on what we should investigate next. Music for the story came from the Free Music Archive by Poddington Bear, Yacht, and Schema Wound. Music also came from Bloodkin. Many thanks to Daniel Hutchins for permission. I'm Emily Seiner, and this is Nashville Public Radio.